Tim O'Reilly is the founder and CEO of O'Reilly Media, a computer book publisher. The company also publishes online through the O'Reilly Network and hosts conferences on technology topics. Tim is an activist for open source, open standards, and sensible intellectual property laws. But today we're going to talk, Tim, about Government 2.0. Explain what that term means.
Government 2.0 fundamentally means the use of technology, especially Web 2.0 related technologies, to improve the effectiveness, accountability, and the transparency of the federal government. When I started exploring this area, the thing that, actually not just the federal government, government at all levels, when I started exploring this, I had a great conversation with Eric Schmidt, and he said, Tim, what you need to do is to do what you did with Web 2.0 originally. Go talk to a lot of people in government, and then tell us a story about what you've learned. A lot of people were focusing on the use of social media by government, maybe on things like cloud computing, maybe on things like, open data and transparency. But I came up with, I think, a more important insight that the heart of Gov 2.0 should be thinking of government as a platform. At first I thought, oh man, that's way too geeky for this crowd. But the iPhone has created a really teachable moment. Because if you think about it, the way that government programs have worked in the past, particularly government IT programs, but really, any level of procurement, they look a lot like the smartphone market before Apple. That is, you got the decision makers together with a few of their, their buddies, their contractors, and they designed a program, and they put it out, and that's all you get. You know, what Apple did was that they embraced, for the smartphone market, something that we've long learned, in areas like the personal computer, the internet, and that is that when you create a platform, other people add value. So things like, data.gov or, the similar things that are happening on the city level, or state level, are really not about transparency. They're about creating the possibility for the private sector to add value to government programs. And not value added as in the old model of, well, we'll appoint somebody to be our value added reseller, which usually means taking something the government has already paid for by the taxpayers and locking it up so the public doesn't have access to it. And so there's actually good examples of this already that people aren't recognizing as part of the story. So for example, the entire, location-based services industry was really bootstrapped by the fact that the government put up GPS satellites. And in 1982, there was a critical decision to open that up to the private sector. And it's taken, close on 30 years, but we now have this rich new set of possibilities in location-based services. As the mobile economy has arrived. So here's government providing a fundamental service the private sector, could not, have envisioned doing, that yet has created possibilities for our society. And so when you look at, the kinds of applications that we're seeing now in cities where they're saying, okay, we're going to have an open data program modeled on what the city of Washington, D.C. did, what Vivek Kundra did there, and what he's now doing at the federal level. What this really means is that the features of, say, government access to information, or services aren't strictly controlled by the government. They're providing the capabilities that allow people to come up with new applications. I gave a talk at the conference called GTEC in Canada last fall. Is in Ottawa, and while I praised the city of Ottawa's cool website and cool mobile apps, I had to point them over to Vancouver because I said, look, over in Vancouver, they've actually created an open data program, and what's so exciting is that they didn't create programs like VanTrash. The public did. Somebody in the private sector did. We're seeing the same thing in areas like, say, a really good example is bus arrival times. The city or the county or the state, or the transportation authority, has to do certain kinds of things. They have to create capabilities that say, okay, we're going to put GPS transponders on our buses, and we're going to have a data feed. But they don't actually have to build the iPhone applications or the Android applications that would allow them, that allows the public to access that data. And I think there's a really interesting lesson here because with the iPhone, Apple developed capabilities, they developed some applications that showed the way. You know, how do you use multi-touch? How do you build compelling user experience? And then they opened the floodgates, and there are 150,000 apps. Some of them are bad. Some of them are wonderful ideas that Apple would never have thought of. And I think that's what we're looking for in the Gov2O sector as well. You know, when you think about, say, government releasing healthcare data, you know, we want to say, how will the private sector use this data to build new kinds of applications? How will we, you know, create new capabilities for citizen engagement? You know, a great example, I think, you know, are things like crime reporting or the 311 kind of apps that we see bringing up everywhere. And it's kind of interesting. It's just like the web or the PC or the phone. It's kind of a messy process. You know, so for example, take C-Click-Fix, you know, which routes citizen reporting of, say, potholes or graffiti or streetlights that are out. Right now, this is just being routed through channels that aren't really equipped to handle it. So you sort of say, oh my gosh, you know, we're getting all these faxes and we're getting all these emails and we're getting all these tweets. What do? But the next stage, of course, is for vendors to come in and say, well, actually, you know, we're going to work the back end for you. A good example of this is CrimeReports.com, a company out of Utah, you know, which basically has a public-facing, you know, website and apps that do all the kind of usual cool, let's show you where the crimes are in your neighborhood and so on. But their real business is they've built software as a service for police departments that helps them, you know, they can draw their own police beats, for example. So an individual officer can, you know, use this as a reporting mechanism. And it's way cheaper and way more effective than the old model of, you know, expensive systems that were being procured for that purpose. Because you get the benefits of agile development, of competition, and so on. And I think in a similar way, we're going to see a collection of C-Click-Fix-like of applications that would act as back-ends for a C-Click-Fix. Now, the role of the government is to say, okay, what we want to do is we'd like to figure out some standard APIs so that these applications will work the same across all cities. So Gov2O, when I talk about thinking like a platform provider, it means figuring out what's going to make it possible to get more for less.
And more for less sounds good, I think, today, and is good. And, you know, many of the applications you described, the government GPS satellites, for instance, or the bus arrival times, indeed help people be better consumers. It improves the consumer experience. Talk to me, though, where you see Government 2.0 moving in terms of improving or enhancing the citizen experience. In other words, moving beyond my role as consumer. I'd love to wait less time for the bus because I've got better information. That's very valuable to me. But ultimately, you know, that doesn't engage me further as a citizen. That's still, I've heard you describe government as a vending machine. I put my money in, I expect the service to come out, and yeah, that's my level of engagement with government. How do we move beyond the vending machine model and move the applications beyond helping me be a better consumer to helping me be a better citizen?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. I guess I would say that there is a lesson that we see replicated again and again on the internet, and that is that a very small number of people create the bulk of the value. This idea that somehow we can get people more engaged. And, you know, yes, we can. I mean, we see examples from politics when you reach out and, have a vibrant campaign like Barack Obama's campaign for president. You could use social media to get people more engaged. You can even do things like, you know, the White House has been doing to try to engage the public in policy making. But at the end of the day, I think the same rule applies as applies to, say, a blog, you know, where 10% of the people comment and 90% of the people lurk. And I don't think we're going to change human nature through this technology. What we can do is create opportunities for people to engage. But I think there's a little bit of a kind of a moralistic idea that I actually think is not the right direction for Gov2O. All the focus, for example, on transparency, you know, this incredible transparency apps that do help people to understand and and watch the process of legislation. But most people don't care. Let me finish this. What matters is that the people who do care have better tools, because they can then, work to get other people to care. And I guess I just feel like, there's no magic bullet that makes people care about issues. It's going to be the passionate users of the transparency systems who then get other people engaged around their specific cause.
Well, the fact is I actually was not talking about transparency, because I completely agree with your point about a few people care and most people don't. I couldn't agree with you more, but let me give you a different example.
Okay.
And you cited the Obama campaign. Let's take the using technology, the Obama campaign made it possible for someone to spend a productive 15 minutes of their Saturday calling into a battleground state.
Yeah.
Now, that was the first. I mean, heretofore, those activities had become professionalized, paid activities. They managed to provide technology that would allow people to do things. In other words, not study things and try, but do things that were beneficial to the campaign. I keep wondering if there's not a parallel that would allow citizens to do something productive for their community in very, very small increments of time.
I think that's a really good point. I will say that one of the, the best platform technologies that I don't hear talked of in a government context is Meetup. There are tens of thousands of meetups to, clean streets, refurbish parks, and so on. And that's a great way that, a technology platform can be used to bring citizens together to do something. And yet I don't see it usually put on the menu by cities that are trying to embrace Gov2.0. So I think that, that's one area. But I also wouldn't discount the see-click-fix kind of application. I mean, the fact is that crime reporting or, pothole reporting is something that the city used to have to do. You know, they'd send out inspectors and so on, and now you're saying, wait, citizens are saying, we can do that. So there are small increments there of citizen participation helping, the civic entity to do its job. That kind of mindset could be embraced more broadly. I think part of what we learn from, from Web 2.0 success stories, I think you're really onto something. The atomic unit of contribution is small, and you have to be able to break something down into, a project that somebody can do in a small amount of time. That's why Wikipedia works, because, they're not asking people to write a 500-page book. They're asking them to make an edit to a 2 or 3-page essay. It's why people comment on or rate products on Amazon. That's why people, why blogging has become, popular, because you can create a small unit of content. So I think you're absolutely right that we have to find those small units of contribution on a civic scale.
Mm-hmm.
The problem that we have is still that it's often, it's like comment on our policy. That's okay, but that's just a new way to use technology to get people to do something they've been doing, all along. They used to write letters, and then they can
send
an email, and now they can, maybe comment on a government blog post. And I think you're absolutely right. We need more than just commenters. We need people to do things.
You are at the forefront of this movement, it seems. Which governments? You mentioned Vancouver earlier. You mentioned D.C. Are there governments that you think are out of the gate quickly on this and get it more than others?
Well, I think it's pretty clear that Washington, D.C. has continued the work that Vivek Kundra did, and they're really a model. One of the things that I like the best is that they have, for example, they have this D.C. App Store, and it features prominently the applications that are built by the city and the applications that are built by the public. And I think that's a wonderful idea. San Francisco, I think, is doing a really good job of trying to engage with this. Although I've had a kind of a closer look at that as I've been at a number of meetings, hosted by Mayor Newsom. And it's really interesting, and spent time with Chris Vian, the CIO, and Jay Nath, who's one of the key guys who's building this technology for them. And they are, Yeah, a good illustration of why it's hard to do some of this stuff in a government context. Mayor Newsom has called me in to try to, you know, help stir the troops and get them excited because, you know, he doesn't actually have the kind of authority that you have in the private sector. No mayor, no governor, no president has the kind of authority that Steve Jobs has at Apple, for instance, to make things happen. And, you know, there are unions, there are, you know, people with tenure. You know, if somebody doesn't want to respond, you can't just say, you know, you're fired. And, you know, so people know that, so they have their own agenda and they don't. So there's a lot more persuasion required. And so a lot of times it's, you know, visionary leadership and then, you know, some small number of people in the administration who are carrying the ball forward, and eventually it starts to snowball. We haven't done, I think, a good enough job yet of creating opportunities for cities to share best practices. Obviously, something like City Camp that we both attended was a beginning. I really like what Code for America is trying to do in trying to bring volunteers from the tech community, not volunteers, but I guess they're kind of volunteers because they're working less than they would in the private sector, you know, to help bring technology to cities that are not as likely to be on the front edge of this movement. But I think we really need to figure out what's the equivalent of an open source strategy for cities and states. Really good example is that everybody has many of the same problems. You know, they've got to run, you know, at the state level, they've got to run a division of motor vehicles, and yet they're all paying, you know, billions of dollars to some vendor to basically build the same system over and over again for them. Why aren't they getting together and saying, okay, we built a good one, you know, let's share it with the other states? That's one of the, I think, one of the GovUS platform issues that I think we need to get our heads around is how do we enable reuse? Open source is one vehicle, cloud computing is another. You know, I think we're seeing some really good leadership from the federal level where they really are putting together a number of cloud computing initiatives, whether at the GSA or at NASA or in the military, to get groups to share resources. And again, this is I think a really important aspect at all levels of government. You know, why are we spending, you know, our taxes keep going up. We're getting less for more. And, you know, a lot of what we're trying to figure out is how can technology help us get more for less? I do think that figuring out where citizens can actually do self-service is part of that. But I think an awfully important part, too, is for government to start thinking about how do you create the conditions where people do the things that you want them to do. You know, a really good example for me out of the government sector is a company that, you know, my venture firm has been looking at investing in called Local Dirt. One of the things that they do is sort of create access to markets for local farmers. You know, one of the things that they've, you know, the founder was a food buyer at a Whole Foods, Milwaukee maybe. And, you know, she found that the reason why they couldn't source locally was that a lot of farmers weren't automated. They were still doing, you know, handwritten orders that they would fax in or that they would accept by fax. Mm-hmm. One of the things that Local Dirt does is it creates, you know, makes it really easy for, say, a local buying group to buy from farmers. So you start thinking about now, okay, I've got a city where, you know, there's very poor access to healthy food in the poorest areas. You know, hey, would the city be able to use a capability like this to bring farm fresh food into a, you know, a depressed area so that it's not just the affluent who can enjoy the benefits of going to the farmer's market? So there it's a private company that is building the capability, but it could be something that the city would do to say, okay, here's our goal. You know, our goal is to, you know, reduce obesity and have healthier food, you know, so that the options aren't corn syrup fed, you know, junk food in these areas, but instead where healthy food is an option. Mm-hmm. And we're going to basically put in place a program like this. And again, you look at increasing the economic vitality of the area by you know, reducing waste at farms, apparently is enormous amount. Something like 60% of produce from a small farm is wasted. So, you know, I think there's a lot of little applications that a city can provide that, you know, are really about making the city a better place. That was why at CityCamp, you know, I led the session saying what makes a great city, because I think, you know, our fundamental guidance, you know, needs to be not just, you know, technology, but what do we want to accomplish? And then we can ask ourselves, is there any technology that could help us? You know, that's another reason we're doing something. We have an event called Maker Faire, and we decided we're going to take it to Detroit because, you know, we think it's this new movement of computer-aided manufacturing and people hacking on smart stuff is a possible way forward for the city of Detroit. You know, can we find new kinds of businesses that can be brought in to this, you know, depressed area? Can we use technology innovation to draw in new people? And actually, a lot of it's already happening, and it really is a social media phenomenon to find them. You know, just the fact that we're saying, okay, we're bringing Maker Faire to Detroit, we're getting all these innovators out of the woodwork, and we're starting to build a technology community in Detroit. And I think that you know, part of the goal traditionally in government is it isn't just the provision of basic services; it is also forethought about how do we improve, you know, the city? How do we improve the state? How do we improve the country? Things like, you know, Portland, with its forethought on zoning and transportation to make the more vibrant city center and to discourage sprawl, you know, that's government as platform thinking. It isn't just about technology. It's saying, okay, we are the platform provider. How do we make a better platform that is going to encourage the public to build a more vibrant place? Again, you know, it's really just an analogy, but when you think of that analogy, I think you start to see a lot of powerful ideas. You know, that if you say our job isn't to provide services, it's to create the conditions where the services will exist.
Tim, it's been a pleasure talking with you. Tim O'Reilly is the founder and CEO of O'Reilly Media and is a leader in the Government 2.0 movement. Tim, thanks so much for being our guest today.
You're very welcome. Thank you.